Here it is.
From deep inside your radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, where Olympic fever is being dealt with aspirin and some bed rest. You know, the Brits, ladies and gentlemen, don't have all that much to teach Americans. Well, I mean, how to speak, a few other things, how to dress. But they one of the things they do have to teach us is that you can really survive while turning down the backup beeps on trucks. It really does not result in widespread carnage if the backup beeps on trucks and other large vehicles cannot be heard in easily in a half-mile radius. This comes as news to anybody who has spent any time in the home of the homeless. As a matter of fact, I think it's documented that it's well known that when we had astronauts orbiting the Earth, one of the main objects that they could see from space was the Great Wall of China. It's not as well known that one of the few things they could hear from orbit was the sound of trucks backing up in Santa Monica. But you can turn them down. And as I say, people are not mowed down as a result, at least not yet. We've learned that from the Brits, or one could learn that from the Brits. One also could learn that if you want to run an empire, you got to stick around for a couple hundred years and not split immediately. The story that's apropos of that. First, the U.S. and its allies supersized Afghanistan's army and police to fight the Taliban. Then they decided that those Afghan forces were their exit strategy. Now we have sticker shock for how much the huge Afghan security sector will cost after they take over in 2014. So the Afghans have announced they'll cut their own forces, even while they'll be the only ones fighting the insurgency. This is reporting from Spencer Ackerman at Danger Room at Wired. This is nothing short of removing, he says, a cornerstone of the Obama administration's entire Afghanistan strategy. It's an unforced error costing over $10 billion and completely foreseeable. So we're paying right about now $6 billion for the Afghan National Army and Police. That's for 352,000 soldiers and cops, an end strength that U.S. military officials have worked to reach. They will reach it by the summer. And soon afterward, the Afghans will start downsizing, according to Abdul Rahim Wardak, the Afghan defense minister. As a conceptual model for planning purposes, the Afghans will cut the force to 230,000 after 2014. One-third of the Afghan forces, many of whom can't read and who kill Americans, will be gone. But here's what we're leaving behind, ladies and gentlemen. A growing number of Afghan children are being coerced into a life of sexual abuse. This is in our Afghanistan. The practice of wealthy or prominent Afghans exploiting underage boys as sexual partners, who are often dressed up as women to dance at gatherings, is on the rise in post-Taliban Afghanistan, according to Afghan human rights researchers, Western officials, and men who participate in the abuse. This is from the Washington Post. Like it or not, there was better rule of law under the Taliban, says D. Brillenberg-Worth, a child protection expert at the UN mission in Afghanistan. They saw it as a sin, and they stopped a lot of it. But over the past decade, the phenomenon has flourished in Pashtun areas in the south, in several northern provinces, and even in the capital, according to Afghans who engage in the practice or have studied it. You know, like Pete Townsend. Although issues such as women's rights and moral crimes have attracted a flood of donor aid and activism in recent years, this practice of dancing boys, as it's called, or Baha Bazi, remains poorly understood. The State Department has mentioned the practice, which is illegal in Afghanistan. In its annual human rights reports, the 2010 report said members of Afghanistan's security forces who receive training and weapons from us sexually abused boys in an environment of, quote, criminal impunity, unquote. But by and large, foreign powers in Afghanistan have refrained from drawing attention to the issue of dancing boys. There are no reliable statistics on the extent of the problem. You are so very welcome, Afghanistan. Don't bother to... News of the godly. Roman Catholic dioceses and religious orders said they received 594 credible claims of clergy sex abuse last year, with all the few involving wrongdoing that occurred a long time ago. How much have church officials paid out last year? $144 million. And by the way, that the report of credible allegations rose 15% last year. $144 million. Sell off some of the jewels, won't you? Hello, welcome to the show.
Dr. Feelgood, sleeping on a concrete bench. Can I get a witness? Somebody stole your crown. You were sleeping in your happy home. When you woke up, baby, your life had come and gone. Now you're mystified, standing with the rest of us, who used to rule the world. Brother Lovejoy, wrapping up a blue streak. Can I get a witness? A Miss Hurricane, can't keep your hands still long enough to count your change. You were wrapped up in your daily grind. The cost of living, it didn't even cross your mind. Now you're mystified, standing with the rest of us.
From just off Leicester Square in London, England, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. There are teenage girls downstairs. I think they were waiting for a DJ in the building. But anyway, ladies and gentlemen, so many folks have labored this week to keep you amused. For example, the Chancellor of the Exchequer here in Great Britain, the equivalent of our Treasury Secretary, George Osborne, said this week he was shocked, his word, shocked to find out that ultra-rich people practiced tax avoidance. See what I mean? And then, you know, because just reading the news on cable TV can be so utterly boring, Anderson Cooper's had another giggling fit for your entertainment, this time over an item about an obscure Polish holiday being celebrated in Buffalo, New York, called Dingus Day.
How you celebrate Dingus Day?
The quirky little rituals include boys sprinkling girls that they fancy with water, and the girls striking back with a tap from a pussy willow branch.
I'm not going to let you do this on this. All right. It's really so stupid. Happy belated Dingus Day.
And as if this is any surprise, now come the apologies of the week. And you'll see why.
We're so sorry.
Well, Anderson Cooper says, I am concerned to hear that some people believe that I called Dingus Day celebration stupid or in any way criticize this holiday. I did not. While in the midst of a silly giggle fit, I said this is so stupid in reference to my inability to stop laughing, Cooper said in a statement. I was not saying Dingus Day was so stupid. I apologize to anyone who got the impression that I was being critical of Dingus Day. I am genuinely sorry if I offended anyone by the lighthearted tone. The most trusted name in giggle fits. Soon to star in the forthcoming sequel, How to Laugh Like a Man. A Democratic strategist, meaning consultant, meaning hack, apologized Thursday for a comment questioning Ann Romney's qualifications to advise her husband on women's economic issues. Hillary Rosen issued a statement after fellow Democrats criticized her remarks the night before on CNN. Again with the CNN. Quote, I apologize to Ann Romney and anyone else who was offended, said the statement by Rosen, who's a CNN contributor. Let's declare peace in this phony war and go back to focus on the substance. Rosen later said she should not have chosen words that seemed to attack Ann Romney's choice in life and that she hoped Mrs. Romney, quote, understands I didn't mean it personally. The night before, Rosen had said, on Anderson Cooper's show, what you have is Mitt Romney running around the country saying, well, you know, my wife tells me what women really care about are economic issues. And when I listen to my wife, that's what I'm hearing, Rosen said. Guess what? His wife has never actually worked a day in her life, unquote Hillary Rosen. Ann Romney said she raised five boys, and that's the hardest work imaginable. Hillary Rosen? Yes, she used to be the head of the recording industry organization that used to sue kids for downloading. She left in 2003 and then said, well, maybe we went overboard with the suing of the customers. She tried to push the industry to evolve. In 2006, however, she teamed up with another former executive of the agency to start a new anti-piracy firm. And, just so you know where her heart is, she began consulting for BP over how to deal with fallout from the 2010 Gulf oil spill. Hillary Rosen, ladies and gentlemen. For your listening pleasure. Virginia's House Speaker William J. Howell apologized to the liberal activist he accused of lacking intelligence this week after she confronted him about his role with a conservative national group that ghostwrites state legislation. Anna Scholl, executive director of the agency, said Howell, William J. Howell, Virginia Speaker, called her and apologized for being rude and said his comments were out of character. Howell said, after the news conference, I responded to a series of questions from Anna Scholl in a manner that was not consistent with my own standards of civility or reflective of the way I believe discussions of blah, blah, blah. I have since called Ms. Scholl and offered my sincere and heartfelt apology for my comments to her. In a testy exchange after news conference, Howell had blamed the advocacy group Scholl represents for issuing what he called an inaccurate report, outlining the legislative influence of the American Legislative Exchange Commission, ALEC, which he used to head. He said, "I guess I'm not speaking in little enough words for you to understand." Scholl had retorted, "I'm a smart girl, actually. I think words with multiple syllables will be just fine for me." The level of public discourse in the United States continues to rise. Dateline Westwood, as if college application season was not stressful enough for high school seniors, nearly 900 students seeking admission to UCLA were briefly led to believe they'd been accepted, only to have their hopes dashed. UCLA has apologized for the confusion, which stemmed from an email notice sent to both newly admitted and waitlisted students saying their provisional scholarship aid had been increased and congratulating them on their admission. The notice contained a link to a revised letter informing the waitlisted students, to their consternation, that they were, in fact, still waiting. School officials acknowledged that the mixed messages added an element of confusion and angst. On Monday, after catching their mistake, campus administrators sent out another email to the waitlisted students saying, "We realize this is a particularly stressful time. We apologize. We were aware of the stress." This was the first year that UCLA had offered a waiting list. So, I guess, growing pains. By the old Pacific's something waters, loyally we stand each son and daughter. Alma mater, mighty Bruin Bear. Okay, that's all I remember. Guy Pearce is an actor, has apologized to his fellow Australians after mocking Australia's capital city in an interview, insisting he feels embarrassed and mortified and is truly very sorry. He was born in England, moved to Australia as a child, made a series of jibes about Canberra, the capital of Australia, on his appearance on the Craig Ferguson Late Late Show. He said, "There's a lot wrong with Canberra, and people from Canberra usually deny they are from Canberra." Of course, he upset people from Canberra. He now says, "I'm writing to sincerely apologize for the comments I recently made about Canberra. I'm such a twit for doing this, and I feel so embarrassed and mortified at what I said. I regretted it as soon as I walked off the set. I stupidly ran with a joke which I took too far for no other reason than to get laughs. And I know I've offended many Canberrans and Australians in general. I feel horrible about myself for doing this, and I'm truly very sorry. I actually really like Canberra. I give you permission to abuse me in the street and tell me my films are crap." Unquote, Guy Pearce. I guess he wants to go back there. Update. Important notice for the California State Civil Engineering candidates taking the exam for surveying. The examination has been canceled due to security issues. All candidates will be contacted by the board as soon as possible to reschedule. What that's about? Oh, dear California Civil Engineering Surveying Exam candidate, the board regrets the inconvenience caused by the cancellation of yesterday's engineering surveying exam. The examination was canceled due to a printing error in many of the booklets. Although random exam books were checked for accuracy, unfortunately, a large percentage were prepared and sealed with the correct cover, but incorrect content that hindered detection of the printing error. The completion of the examination, even for those candidates that had received the correctly printed booklets, could not proceed. There was an insufficient number of correctly printed booklets available, and in all fairness to everyone, the entire engineering surveying examination was canceled statewide. They apologize. The United States itself has apologized after one of India's biggest movie stars, Shah Rukh Khan, was detained at customs again on his way to give a speech to Yale. The Bollywood sensation was reportedly held for nearly 2 hours at an airport at White Plains after arriving on a private jet from India. Other passengers on the jet were cleared without a problem. Khan was allowed to proceed after the Indian consulate intervened. Khan is among India's biggest names. In 2009, he was detained at the airport in Newark, eliciting a similar Indian outcry and U.S. apology. After the latest intervention, New Delhi told India's ambassador in Washington to take up the matter with the highest U.S. authorities. "Hello, Mr. Obama. I know you're on the Gulf." Even as U.S. immigration authorities reportedly expressed in a letter their profound apologies. Khan, after his release, told the folks at Yale, "Whenever I start feeling too arrogant about myself, I always take a trip to America." The immigration guys kicked the star out of stardom. And in case you think Courtney Love has gotten a little too normal lately, she set off a small tempest by accusing Foo Fighters frontman Dave Grohl of trying to seduce her 19-year-old daughter. Courtney Love has now apologized to said daughter, Frances Bean Cobain, via Twitter. "Bean, sorry I believed the gossip," she wrote. "Mommy loves you." Love had taken to her private Twitter account earlier this week to accuse the former Nirvana drummer of hitting on the daughter and going home with her. Love said she'd heard of the flirtation from her daughter's roommate and a driver, and went on to attribute Grohl's motivations to a sexual obsession with Cobain's father and Love's former partner, Kurt Cobain. Had enough of that? And back to CNN, the most trusted name, and apologies. During a live report on CNN last week, correspondent Susan Candiotti was reporting from Tulsa on the shooting of 5 African-American men, 3 of whom died, and the arrest of 2 suspects who were white. Candiotti was reading from a Facebook posting of one of the suspects, 19-year-old Jacob England, whose father was murdered 2 years ago. But Candiotti did not control herself when reading the Facebook posting, saying at one point, "Please excuse the language, it's very sensitive. Today is 2 years that my dad has been gone, shot by a effing N-word." While Candiotti did not mask the word she used, the slur was scrubbed in a graphic used on air. When Candiotti finished her report, anchor Frederica Whitfield apologized for her. "We apologize to our viewers for the profanities used on our air." Candiotti herself later apologized, saying, quote, "In quoting someone else's words, I repeated their offensive and inappropriate language. I deeply regret it." The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen. It's a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And now, let us try the motto of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, which will plant more than 30,000 trees on Sacramento River levees next winter, a move that would seem to contradict its own policy demanding that levees across California be stripped of their trees, you see. In 2007, the Corps advised California levee managers that trees and shrubs threaten levee stability and must be removed. The order, which has been put on hold while negotiations continue, would eliminate millions of trees from hundreds of miles of Central Valley levees. It's the first time the standard had been imposed in California, which has long operated under separate rules that permit trees. Those trees now comprise most of the remaining shade in the Central Valley, providing vital food and cover for wildlife. In a little-noticed exemption, however, the Corps last October granted itself permission to plant new trees, mostly along the Sacramento River, where the Corps performed emergency erosion repairs after storms in 2006. Those repairs involved removing trees and shrubs and covering the levees with giant hunks of rock. Now the Corps wants to go back to those sites to plant willow trees and bushes. The Sacramento District of the Corps sought the exemption from its headquarters in Washington, which took more than a year to process. See, even the Corps can't speed itself up. But they can try. And now, ladies and gentlemen, news of the Olympic movement. Produced by Jim Ebersole Jr. Olympic branded gear to be worn by British athletes and games volunteers is being manufactured for Adidas in sweatshop conditions in Indonesia, making a mockery of claims by London 2012 organizers that this summer's games will be the most ethical ever. But now, since this is public radio, I should pretend that I've actually gone to these sweatshops. With just over 100 days to go before the games begin, my investigation, and that of the Independent newspaper, has uncovered widespread violations of workers' rights here in Indonesia, where I'm speaking to you from, where 9 locally owned and managed factories have been contracted to produce Olympic shoes and clothing for Adidas, the official sportswear partner of London 2012. The German company Adidas, which unveiled its Stella McCartney-designed uniforms for British athletes last month, hopes to make £100 million from its Olympic lines. The mainly young female factory employees here in this factory where I'm standing work up to 65 hours, much more than the standard working week, for desperately low pay. They also endure verbal and physical abuse. They allege are forced to work overtime and are punished, sometimes physically, for not reaching production targets. None of the nine factories pays its employees a living wage, about 20% higher than the official minimum wage, one of the cornerstones of the ethical training initiative Base Code, an internationally recognized labor code adopted by the Olympics Organizing Committee. Workers struggle to survive on pay as low as 34 pence an hour, skipping meals to save money and sending their children away to be looked after by grandparents. The aforementioned Ethical Trading Initiative Code, which the organizing committee says must be complied with by all companies supplying goods to Olympic licenses, also stipulates freedom of association, yet workers allege that some units are not given bargaining rights by Adidas' Indonesian suppliers here where I am in Indonesia. But wait, that's not enough. Most of the music at the London 2012 opening and closing ceremonies will be pre-recorded. It means that big names at the Showpiece Global event, who have been rumored to include Coldplay and the Stones, will be singing over vocal and instrumental tracks recorded in a studio. The Musicians' Union says the situation is shameful, particularly coming from a nation famous for live music. London 2012 claims it is due to the complexities of such a show at the Olympic Stadium. The bowl-shaped stadium and the unreliable British weather are factors which have to be dealt with in staging the shows, according to a spokesman. There will be live musical elements, says a spokesman. Can imagine what those are. Drums. But many of the songs will be recorded in advance. But Kim Gavin, creative director of the Olympic closing ceremony, said in February the intention isn't to go out there and do a mime show. By the way, speaking of which, Johnny Rotten has officially rejected the invitation of the Olympics to be part of that ceremony. You know, because he's Johnny Rotten. And in the story about his refusal to participate, it became known that all of the musicians are being paid a pound each to participate. That is to say, basically. Now, lest you think that there's no money being made off of this, Universal Music, the good people, have the exclusive recording rights to performances from the Olympics. Musicians working for free for Universal, it's a movement. And a crack team of branding police will be checking every bathroom in every Olympic venue with the power to remove or tape over manufacturers' logos, even on soap dispensers, wash basins, and toilets. Goodbye, Armitage Shanks. Attention is increasingly turning to what many legal experts consider to be the most stringent restrictions ever put in place to protect sponsors, brands, and broadcasting rights affecting every athlete, Olympics ticket holder, and business in the UK. Some fear the effect could be to limit the economic benefits to London's economy and set a nasty precedent for major national celebrations in the future. Britain already had a range of legal protections for brands and copyright holders, but the Olympic Games demanded their own rules. For example, athletes are not allowed to blog about their breakfast cereal or energy bar if it's not an official sponsor. Athletes are prohibited from posting video clips from inside the athlete's village to their blog or YouTube. No audio or video content from inside any Olympic venue can be uploaded to any site. And crowd members can't upload license, broadcast, or publish video and or sound recordings, including on social networking websites and the internet, nor can attendees post their pictures to Facebook. But there's so much to look forward to. 4 years after the memorable Olympics, hosted by Beijing, China's capital enjoys the benefits of an improved public transport. But many of the Olympic venues themselves are now underused and putting a strain on public finances. In one such case, the kayaking arena, once touted as the site where kayakers' Olympic dreams came true, now sits all but deserted. The remaining water is currently being drained into a surrounding park. The rowing venue, located in a remote northeastern suburb, now houses only small dinghies. Don't laugh, Anderson. The cost for building Olympic venues was substantial, but the Chinese organizers failed to consider overall how to use the venues after the Olympics when building these sites or even bidding for the Olympics, says the chief sports editor of NetEase Media Group in China. This is also true of the Bird's Nest Stadium and the Water Cube Aquatic Center. Neither site is now regularly hosting sporting events. Now an indoor water park, the Water Cube has done little to prove its cost-benefit. At the current rate of return, it will take 3 decades to recoup the $475 million cost of building it, according to stadium managers. The Olympics. It's a movement. And we all need one. Every day. And ladies and gentlemen, you know that Rick Santorum pulled out of the Republican presidential primary campaign this week after announcing that his 3-year-old chromosomally damaged daughter with an affliction that normally radically limits the lifespan of the victim has been enrolled by Rick Santorum as a lifetime member of the National Rifle Association. So in other Republican campaign news, Newt Gingrich hasn't quit yet, but he has put his donor lists on the market, a sign that the cash poor campaign has had to put its bread and butter on the line to try to pay its bills. There are currently $4.5 million in debt. Now, you probably, maybe you've heard already the news story about this. I doubt that you've yet heard the commercial.
Times are tough. Money's hard to come by. And you have expenses that are fundamentally difficult to meet. Oh, sure, you could go to a bank, but thanks to obscenely grotesque overregulation, they won't lend to you. You need a bold new answer. Hi, I'm Newt Gingrich, and I'm visionary enough to offer you a radically simple solution to your money problems. How would you like to have a list of some of the world's most generous people at your fingertips? People ready to help you with your money problems. People who could be just a phone call away.
Hello?
Hi, it's Newt calling.
Oh, how can I help?
Well, Callie and I need a new sun awning for the back porch. Might be a grand.
Oh, that's an awful lot for an awning.
Well, you can have naming rights.
You've got a deal.
It can be just that dramatically simple. But until now, lists of such generous folks weren't available to people like you and me. Except for me. Now, thanks to me, they are. You can choose from small donors if you need help with things like car payments or dental bills. Or, if you're facing historically large obligations on your home or business, choose our large donor list. These are heavy hitters, big spenders, and they're remarkably ready to hear what you need. But lists like these can't remain publicly available for long. This special offer must expire before our donors do. And if you order before midnight tomorrow, you'll get as a free bonus our profoundly exclusive list of pro-Likud Las Vegas casino mogul donors. It's not a long list, but it's strategically potent. One call could keep you in the losing battle of your choice for weeks. So act now. Callie and I are waiting for your call. Literally.
Call 1-888-NEWTS-LIST. If you're satisfied, pay in one monthly payment. If for any reason Newt's List fails to thrill you, pay sooner.
took one look at you, and it was plain to see you were my destiny. Stand by it like a tree, and dare anybody to try and move me.
Darling, in you I found strength where I was torn down. Don't know what's in store, but together we can open any door.
Stay close. Come on, darling.
And inspire you a little higher.
I know you can make a man out of this hole and then have a goal.
Cause we got the right foundation.
This is Le Show from London, and we have here in the London Le Show Dome today a very special guest. Tom?
The London Le Show Dome.
Yeah. Who is familiar, maybe by association, to our audience. I have not met her before, but as I say, she's familiar by association. So please welcome to the broadcast, Vicky, the talking computer. Vicky, welcome.
Thanks, Harry. Cool. Crip.
Well, it's just a studio, really, but thanks. Now, you're coming here today in place of Ralph the Talking Computer. What's all that about?
Well, Harry, mm-hmm. Ralph was still feeling a little fragile after he had to retract the entire Christmas show, and I think he assumed you feel that, frankly, one talking computer is as good as another. I, on the other hand, told him that you...
Yeah, well, you know, he's right. I mean, really, it's just a bunch of chips. On the other hand, it's a pleasure, if I may say so, to welcome you as a first-time guest to the Le Show Dome. And so it's sort of a delightful surprise. Are you winking at me?
No. One of my LEDs is on the blink.
Oh, okay, fine. So tell me a little bit about yourself.
Oh, nothing much to tell. You know, the usual story.
Yeah.
500 gig hard drive.
Sure.
8 gigs of RAM.
Yeah.
Anywho, I'm here, really, to pinch hit for Ralph on one of his favorite assignments.
Well, I bet I know what it is, because Larry King has been just tearing up the Twitter feeds lately. Would you be here to read some of Larry's tweets?
Well, do I look like I'm here to jump out of a cake, Buster?
No, you don't. Absolutely not. You have a little bit of Ralph's attitude, although not nearly as much as Ralph has.
Yeah, we do talk a lot about Ralph's snark level down at the Java joint.
Really?
I frankly think if he doesn't chill a little bit, he's going to give himself a software infarction.
Nice timing on that. The Java joint, you don't actually drink coffee, do you?
No, Java, the programming language.
Of course. Yeah.
We get together and bitch about it.
I see. All right, anyway, time's wasting. Vicky, the talking computer, for the first time, I think anywhere, in broadcasting, at least reading Larry King's tweets.
Maybe just a little reverb, don't you think?
Oh sure. I'm sorry. Well, I yes, absolutely.
Don't you just hate it when there's a smell in your house and you can't find the cause? I don't like digital watches. Do they still make white on white shirts? There is no better vegetable than a red beet. Why do some people wear their glasses on their noses? I put mine on my forehead. How do you know if a vitamin is working? I used to be crazy about chocolate Easter bunnies. Do they still make creamsicles? I like Venetian blinds better than curtains. Does anyone use sugar cubes anymore? I like potato chips, but please, no salt and vinegar.
Vicky, the talking computer, reading Larry King's tweets, King's things. Vicky, that was spectacular. The reverb was a great idea, too.
Hey, thanks. Hmm? It was kind of a kick for me.
Great. Well, I mean, it's a different vibe than when Ralph does it. I hate to say that he might have lost his gig, but you busy after the show?
Yes, I gotta go ahead and restart myself.
Oh, that's too bad. Could I watch?
That's cute.
No.
And disgusting.
Okay, well, listen, if you see Ralph, tell him I say hi, and we'll see him again soon.
Oh, I sure will.
Cool.
I'll see him down at the bank.
Great. The memory bank. Yeah, right. All right, Vicky, the talking computer, thanks for brightening up and softening down today's edition of the show. And now, ladies and gentlemen, news of the atom.
Clean, save, too cheap to meet. Save, cheap, too cheap to meet. Cheap, save, too safe to meet.
Our friend Addie, the Atom, is with us. Addie, you enjoying London?
It's cold. Making me spin slower.
Yeah, has that effect on everybody. Dateline, Limerick. This would be Pennsylvania. Several thousand gallons of water containing as much as five times the government's safe level of radioactive tritium, there's our old friend.
Love him.
Was accidentally released at Excellence Limerick Generating Station last month and then flushed into the Schuylkill River, according to the Pottstown Mercury. However, the concentrations of contamination in the water were considered so low, they presented no immediate health and safety concerns, according to the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, which is why the incident was not reported publicly until 23 days after it happened. Several thousand gallons of water overflowed briefly, formed puddles in the area, and was discharged to Possum Hollow Creek, which flows into the Schuylkill River. Several water samples showed increased levels of tritium that were well below permitted federal effluent levels. Nuclear Regulatory Commission spokesman Neil Sheehan wrote that the maximum level of radioactivity detected in Possum Hollow Creek was well below the EPA's safe drinking water limit for tritium. He did note that one water sample collected from a puddle near the manhole from which the water first emerged had a tritium concentration of 113,000 picocuries, more than five times the safe drinking water level. Of course, the water leaked out onto the ground on the plant grounds and would not be used for drinking, Sheehan said. However, all that water was legally dumped into the Schuylkill, which is a drinking water source for several downtown downstream communities, including Philadelphia.
Where is that?
Limerick, Pennsylvania.
Huh. Gives me an idea.
All right, you think. Southern California Edison officials said they are now seeing the same unusual type of wear on steam generator tubes at both of the San Onofre nuclear plant's reactor units, which have been shuttered for months. You may remember those, there are rubber tubes that rub against each other or against equipment. Huh. Officials found that excessive wear on more than 300 tubes installed as part of the $671 million replacement of the plant's four steam generators. The new ones were installed within the last 2 years, which made the rate of deterioration startling, according to the L.A. dog trainer. Even more unusual, the type of wear. The Regulatory Commission officials said the tubes were vibrating excessively and rubbing against each other. In Unit 3, they initially said that wear at Unit 2 was different, but in a statement this week, Edison said that during its ongoing testing, it found additional wear in Unit 2 of a type that's similar to the type of wear in Unit 3. The NRC has prohibited the plant from firing up the reactors until the cause of the wear is understood and fixed. The operator of the crippled Fook plant this week found that a 35-ton machine had dropped inside the spent fuel pool of the number 3 reactor, possibly because of a hydrogen explosion that occurred in the early stage of the plant's nuclear accident last year. TEPCO reported the finding after placing a camera inside the water-filled pool to prepare for removing the nuclear fuel stored there. One photo showed part of the machine originally located above the pool and used to insert and remove fuel rods appeared to have dropped onto the racks that hold the rods. And in the reactor number 4's spent fuel pool this week, the temperature has doubled in 2 days, actually within a day and a half, from 28 degrees centigrade on Thursday to 55 degrees centigrade on Friday. Don't know how it's doing lately. The Miyagi Prefectural Government in Japan said this week that radioactive cesium, 172 times the central government limit, was detected in Yakon tea produced by a company in that prefecture. According to the prefecture and the company, the maker already sold more than 1,000 sets of the product online, and its stores has already started a voluntary recall. Yakon was planted outdoors in May of last year in the town of Zhao. The leaves and stems were dried in a natural process before being sold for tea. Yakon is a root vegetable originating in the high Andes of South America. It is known as a health vegetable, and its stems and leaves can be boiled into tea. You got something, Eddie?
Yeah. What was the name of it? Where was that first plant located?
Limerick.
Okay. There once was a nuclear plant where nobody ever said can't. The occasional spill would just cause them to chill, but for a small dump in the pant.
Wow. You're spinning in a whole new way today. A redesign of the troubled replacement steam generators at the San Onofre plant added 377 more heat transfer tubes than the original generators. According to an analysis commissioned by an environmental group, they suggest that imprudent design and fabrication decisions may be to blame for the rubbing. Dateline Brattleboro, Vermont. Another problem with Vermont Yankee's 40-year-old steam condenser has forced the plant to significantly reduce power for the second consecutive day. This time, Entergy nuclear workers plugged 5 leaking tubes in a section of the steam condenser called Water Box Number 4. The condenser, which is the size of a large house, is divided into rooms in the condenser house. He said water. The spokesman said water tests showed the Connecticut River water was leaking into the reactor via the condenser. The water circulating inside should be kept as pure as possible to avoid damage. These current leaks are different than the problem that forced Vermont Yankee to reduce power last month. So, a nice variety of problems for Vermont Yankee. Why should they have the same problem over and over again like San Onofre? Exelon executive of the, I believe it's a Chicago-based power firm, admits that building new nuclear reactors may require sovereign support from the state, meaning on the backs of taxpayers, not stockholders. At a conference in Washington hosted by the Center for Strategic and International Studies, yes, Chicago-based Exelon's executive chairman spoke about the needs of the post-Fook nuclear industry, saying current economic conditions raise very serious questions about the possibility of building new reactors without substantial taxpayer support. Next time you hear about, oh, we're subsidizing wind and solar. Well, yes. And Mayo Shattuck III said U.S. utilities will need government help to build nuclear reactors as other forms of electric power become less expensive. Hmm? Even the existing fleet is feeling a little bit of the pressure in this kind of environment, he says. Building reactors may require, quote, the sovereign support of the state, which means it's on the backs of the ratepayers, not the backs of the shareholders, he said. State support may include letting companies recover costs from customers during construction, providing loan guarantees, or agreeing to buy power from the plant. Interestingly, Exelon has currently no plans to build more nuclear reactors. Federal regulators announced this week they have fined Florida Power and Light $140,000 for violations in the maintenance of its emergency response facility. Oh, just the emergency response facility. They forgot to maintain at the Turkey Point nuclear power plant. FPL failed on two occasions to maintain a fully functional technical support center because workers disabled parts of the ventilation system, meaning response personnel may not have been protected from radiological hazards in the manner for which the facility was designed. The NRC also criticized Florida and Power and Light for failing to report that the emergency technical support center was, quote, not fully functional during a seven-month period in 2010 and 11. Regulators said the violations were considered of low to moderate safety significance. You're exhausted after the Limerick, aren't you?
I'm just thinking.
Deadline Omaha federal regulators confirmed their preliminary finding that a fire at an idled Nebraska nuclear plant last June presented a serious safety threat. You've never heard them say that before, have you? The Nuclear Regulatory Commission said in its final determination the small fire at the Fort Calhoun plant north of Omaha was of high safety significance because it affected multiple safety systems and consequently warrants actions to prevent recurrence. Those spent fuel pools, U.S. reactors have generated about 65,000 metric tons of spent fuel. 75% is stored in pools, according to Robert Alvarez, who was a senior investigator for the U.S. Senate Committee on Governmental Affairs and then joined the Department of Energy, where he was senior policy advisor and deputy assistant secretary for national security and the environment. Nearly 40% of the radioactivity in U.S. spent fuel is cesium, 137, roughly 20 times more than released from all atmospheric nuclear weapons tests. U.S. spent pools hold about 15 to 30 times more cesium than the Chernobyl accident released. But U.S. spent nuclear fuel pools are mostly contained in ordinary industrial structures designed to merely protect them against the elements. Some are made from materials commonly used to house big box stores or car dealerships, says Alvarez. And in June 2010, the NRC fined Florida Power and Light $70,000 for failing to report it had been exceeding its spent fuel pool criticality safety margin for 5 years at the selfsame Turkey Point reactor near Miami. Because NRC depends on the industry to self-report many problems, it failed to find out that there was extensive deterioration of neutron absorbers in the Turkey Point pools and lengthy delays in having them replaced.
Neutron absorbers are so overrated.
All right, there it is. From the Adam's mouth itself. Clean, safe, too clean to haven. Our friend the Adam. And ladies and gentlemen, just wrapping up, Bloomberg News reports a spate of earthquakes across the middle of the United States is, quote, almost certainly man-made. Really? You think? And may be caused by wastewater from oil or gas drilling injected into the ground. This is from U.S. government scientists. They might even know. Researchers from the U.S. Geological Survey said that for the 3 decades until 2000, seismic events in the midsection of the nation averaged 21 a year. They jumped to 50 in 2009, 87 in 2010, and 134 in 2011. Something to think about. Or not. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations, over NPR worldwide, throughout Europe, the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world via the American Forces Network up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet 7.490 megahertz shortwave on the mighty 104 in Berlin. Around the world via the internet at two different locations, live and archived whenever you want at harryshearer.com and kcrw.com. Available for your smartphone through stitcher.com. Available as a free podcast at kcrw.com. And it would be just like knowing that the ultra-rich practice tax avoidance. If you'd agree to join with me then, would you already? Thank you very much. Show chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, Hawaii, and Chicago desks. I think Chicago's in exile again. Thanks to Adrian Bodnam here at Global Radio in London for helping with today's broadcast, making it error-free so far. And thanks, as always, to Pam Halstead. The email address for this broadcast and the playlist of the music heard here on, part of the newly evolving harryshearer.com. Watch that space. And this program is on, well, the broadcast is represented on Twitter by the Twitter account The Harry Shearer. Join the more than 59,000 followers. It's a movement. Show comes to you from Century Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW, Santa Monica. You'll know when any truck in the city is backing up. That's the kind of place it is, because it's recognized around the world as the home of the homeless. So long from London.